I can hear you.
Okay.
All right. Welcome, everybody. First time that we're meeting in person in a long time. This is in lieu of the Shavuot shiur that I prepared and gave to a limited number of people on Shavuot night at 2:30 in the morning. There were some people there, but not people that come to the shiur. So, well, mostly. So we'll start here. The topic on Shavuot was supposed to be connected to Shavuot, which we addressed, actually, whether or not Shavuot is really a time to discuss Torah Shebaal Peh, as opposed to discussing Torah Shebichtav, which is a share I gave a long time ago, which we've actually discussed over here, the history of Torah Shebichtav. But in my opinion, Shavuot is definitely a time to discuss Torah Shebaal Peh, and hopefully by the time we get to the end, I don't think we're going to finish everything tonight. There's a lot to cover. We'll see how the relationship between Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichtav is pretty much... Actually, you know, I'll leave it up to you to pick the right metaphor for later.
Can you make the screen a little bigger, please?
Yeah, I'll make it bigger. Just so you know, most of the material that I'm going to present to you is based on a book that was put out by YU, which is based on the lectures of Herschel Schechter about Torah Shebaal Peh. He gave really monumental lectures, and they made it into a book that's not available in stores. I have it. It was given out, I think, at a Smicha convention, and a friend gave it to me, so that's how I have it. And a lot of the material here is based on that, but with my own expansions and insights. So we'll start where you have to start when you're going to talk about Torah Shebaal Peh, which is the Rambam's introduction to his Perush Mishnayot. Actually, it's interesting to know about the book, the Perush Mishnayot. It's the first book that he wrote. He wrote it when he was young. So if you ever find Steve wrote like contradictions between the Rambam's Perush and Mishnayot and anything else, pretty much whatever comes later goes, because he wrote it when he was very young, and Perush on the entire Mishnayot. But these things, we can assume that he if he said them, he meant them. And you find shades of them everywhere else in his writings, like in the Arach HaZakah and other places. So we can assume that this is his opinion. And here is where he lays out the foundation of what Torah Shebaal Peh is. And I want to make it clear, he's going to give five different categories of Torah Shebaal Peh, five different categories. We're going to focus on the first three. And the reason is that the first three are D'oraita, and the last two are only D'rabbanan. Many times when people say the words Torah Shebaal Peh, they mistakenly think that it means things that are D'rabbanan, things that are, you know, invented by the rabbis, not required by the Torah. Not even in a derogatory way. That's just the way that we think. If it's not written in the Torah, then it's not D'oraita. But that's not true. That's what the Rambam is going to say over here. There are some things that are D'oraita, and there are some things that are D'rabbanan that are in Torah Shebaal Peh. And it's clear. It's obvious. Once we see it, you'll know. So the Rambam gives five different divisions. The first division, he says, are explanations transmitted from the mouth of Moshe, and they have a hint in Scripture, and it is possible to extrapolate them by way of reasoning. And about these, there is no disagreement. If somebody says, it has been transmitted to me, there is nothing to say about it. Okay, this is simple. This says that there are certain things in the Torah where the Torah has a word and the rabbis say, we have a tradition that the proper explanation for this word is X or Y, and nobody disputes that, and you can't dispute it. That's what they say. This is how Moshe explained this word to Bnei Israel, and that's it. There's nothing to talk about. You're not going to find any disagreement in the Talmud about that. That's the first category. The second category is very similar to that, except without the word part. The second division of the laws about which it is said, halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, and there are no proofs about them, as we have mentioned. Likewise here, none disagree with such a law. These are things that have no basis in the text at all. Okay? So whereas, for example, in the first division, right, in the first section, you'll have something like, like etrog. Okay? The Torah says, pre-Eitz Hadar. What's a pre-Eitz Hadar? It just means a citrus fruit. How do you know what it is? So the rabbis come along and say, oh, that's an etrog. Okay, well, we wouldn't know that otherwise, but they say that's what the word means. That's what the Torah is describing. But then you have other things like the way that tefillin look. Okay, the way tefillin look, they have to be black. They have to be square. They have to have a certain shape about it. The ritzuot also have to be black. There's no mention in the Torah about that at all. Just as tefillin. We don't know what tefillin is, and we don't know all these halachot about the ritzuot aren't mentioned. How are we supposed to know what that is? That's halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Even further, there are things that the Torah doesn't even mention as existing. At least the tefillin, the Torah says tefillin. So what are tefillin? We need the rabbis to tell us. But there are certain things that the Torah doesn't even say anything about. Give an example. Where in the Torah does it say that if you make a neder, you can then go afterwards to a beit din and get it annulled? Nowhere. Doesn't say it anywhere. Hatarat nedarim doesn't show up anywhere. There's a whole masechet about nedarim. A lot of it is devoted to hatarat nedarim, I can tell you that. Nowhere is the Torah mentioned hatarat nedarim. Haparat nedarim is mentioned. Haparat nedarim is that a father or a husband can annul the vow of their daughter or wife, if it affects them. But hatarat nedarim, what we do on Erev Rosh Hashanah, what we do on Yom Kippur, in Kol Nidre, nowhere in the Torah. Nowhere at all. Another example, Aravot, that we do on Sukkot. Yeah, Yom Arava. They would do that every single day in the Beit HaMikdash. We don't do it every single day anymore. We only do it on Rosh Hashanah Rabbah with the banging and everything. They would go around the Bima with everything, with Aravot. They did it all the time. That's not mentioned in the Torah at all. It's a lechal moshe misinai. And about this, the Rambam says they will never find any disagreement in the Gemara. There are no machlokot about lechal moshe misinai. Once somebody says, I have a tradition that this is what we're supposed to do, that's the end of the conversation. Now we get to the third part. And this is where the fireworks start to go off. The Rambam says the third division are the laws that they extrapolated by the ways of reasoning. And a disagreement about them develop, as we've mentioned. These are the laws that come about through drashot. Rabbis say, it says this over here, it says that over there, it must be that this is the halacha. Rabbis say, if this is the case, then kal vachomer, then that's the case. Oh, the rabbis say, no, every single one of the Yud Gimel drashot, let's say, Yud Gimel Midot that Rabbi Ishmael teaches us about, which, by the way, that's only one list. There's another list with 24 Midot during drashot. There's another list with fewer. There are different lists with different Midot. We hold by some, we don't hold by others. Maybe some are subcategories of others. Be that as it may, the rabbis, according to the Rambam, the law in these cases is decided according to the majority, and this happens when the investigation is given to divergence, and because of this, they say, if it is a transmitted law, we will accept it, but if it's a law that is deduced, there's a rebuttal. Namely, that there can be disagreement about these laws. The things that come down to drashot, you can have one rabbi say, okay, we should learn it this way. Another rabbi says, we should learn it that way. And then it comes down to the Sanhedrin making a decision based on majority. But these things were not transmitted to Moshe at Sinai. So if you find yourself in a Gemara where it's used a Gezerah Shava, right, where you have a similar word used over here and used over there, and they start learning halachot from one to the other, that's a sign, the Rambam writes, that it was not transmitted to Moshe at Sinai that this is the way things should be. Or at least it wasn't, I shouldn't say it wasn't transmitted, it wasn't given as a Masorah. No, you can even say it wasn't transmitted, that's what these words mean. And he says, in these cases, the disagreement and investigation occurred about something that a transmitted law was not heard, and you will find in all of the Talmud that they are examining the basis of the reasoning that caused the disagreement between the disputants. In other words, these come about because of a difference of opinion in analysis about these psukim.
Meaning, in essence, it's open to discussion.
Yes. It's open to the methodology.
It's open to the methodology that was handed down in order to extrapolate halacha.
Let's go with that. It's the safest bet.
Whereas the others aren't.
The others are closed. The others, he says, if you find that there's a machloket about something, then that is a sign that there was no tradition about it, and rather they were using their laws of deduction and midot and midrashot to figure out what the halacha should be.
Could you, in theory, argue, therefore, that only that subdivision is alive, in essence, to continual halachic evolution, whereas the other two are not?
Yeah, if you'd like. I mean, at a certain point, the Sanhedrin decides and says, this is the halakha because of majority, and then that becomes the halakha. But you're right, in theory, right? In those cases, in theory, you could have another Sanhedrin that comes along and uproots it. Or...
But they couldn't uproot anything that was halakha measured.
No, they're not going to uproot that tefillin has to be black and that creates adar as an intro. Right? Mm-hmm. But in theory, let's say, you know, as he gives an example, right? Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argue about whether or not you're supposed to do Kiddush first or Netilat Yadayim, although that's not going on, I guess, Netilat Yadayim. But other cases as well, where even if you have a drashot, a machloket about whether chametz is chametz, you know, in the fifth hour is aser b'hana or aser b'achila, those kinds of things, right? Those kinds of things could, in theory, whether or not they'll change is one thing, but certainly you could piggyback on, let's say, a discarded opinion, maybe in some cases, right? These are tricks of the trade of how halacha works, and maybe use that kind of opinion that was disregarded later. Maybe. Now he continues, and he's very vociferous about this. He says, but one who would think that the laws about which they disagree are likewise transmitted from the house of Moshe, and they think that a disagreement occurred by way of mistake in the laws, or because one of them received the true transmission and the other made a mistake, said, this is very repugnant. This is disgusting. You should say that people forgot. There's no way that the rabbis forgot an explicit halacha that was transmitted to them by Moshe at Sinai. There's no way. It didn't happen. It couldn't happen. Rather, what happened was is that there are certain things that weren't transmitted, and through the beginning of history, the rabbis were so in sync that they all came up with the same thing, so they didn't dispute each other. And then at a certain point, it started to break down, and people, the way that he says it, is that the students weren't diligent in learning from their teachers, and so they started to diverge in their analysis. And they started to have divisions. Some emphasize this, some emphasize that, and they started to come to machlokot, and that's what most of the Gemara is. Okay, so this is the yesod that the Rambam puts down. The first three categories, you have halachot that Moshe had transmitted to everybody and that were based in words. And then you have halachot that don't even have words. They're just halachah l'moshe Sinai. Right? Those, on the one hand, are the most tenuous, but on the other hand, once somebody says this is halachah l'moshe Sinai, that's the end of the conversation. And then you have, I guess, the bulk of the Gemara, because the Gemara has argumentation, which is things that there are disputes about, which are undoubtedly things that were not transmitted to Moshe at Sinai directly. Now the Rambam has a fourth and a fifth category. The fourth is things that are made up by the Nevi'im as kind of like mitzvot derabanan, like Megillah and Chanukah. And then you have takanot, which are things like, for example, muktzah, ways that the rabbi said, you know, we have to be careful not to do this or not to do that. So therefore they made up new halachot. Okay, that's the Rambam. Now, who disagreed? So the Shut Chavot Ya'ir, which is Rav Ya'ir Bakrak, I'll get the exact year of his living for David, who's going to ask me. The Chavot Ya'ir, 18th century. Pretty sure, 18th, 17th century. How are you doing, Dad? Can you still hear me? My internet connection is unstable. This internet's not working, so I don't have fun. Okay. You're on mute, so I can't hear you.
I hear you now, but you were frozen for a while.
Okay. Chavot Ya'ir, did you get it?
I'm just trying to do it right now. Sorry, come on, Friedenberg. No, because there's so many places now called Chavot Ya'ir. So Ya'ir.
What, place?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Chet Vavav.
Ya'ir Chaim Bachur.
Ya'ir Bachur. What year?
So 1638.
Okay, 1638. All right, so shortly after the Shulchan Aruch. So the Chavot Ya'ir, so he quotes the Rambam. And then he says, it seems like the Rambam wants to say that, okay, there's a boundary for shechicha, for forgetfulness. Anytime it says anything that was given at Sinai, there can't ever be any forgetfulness. The only time you have a machloket is are things that were not halacha l'moshe m'sinai, like we talked about. It says, Arav bana choma b'tziras aviv Torah Shebaal Peh. He built a, you know, wall around things that are Torah Shebaal Peh. Shelo shayach b'shichicha. Halavai shenuchal l'chazka l'amida. I wish we could hold it up. Ma she'yavshal l'dati, but I don't think we can. Av ki yatsa schar b'hafseid ma shekadu shekol shar machloket chazal shehem ruba d'ruba b'Torah Shebaal Peh v'kimat kol sidre mishna enem kal m'sinai. And I recognize that almost all of Talmud is from, says, first of all, according to the Rambam, that means that almost all the Talmud is not from Sinai. Right? So In other words, there's a give and take over here. According to the Rambam, most of the Gemara are things that the rabbis essentially made up based on their midot and yerushalayim, which may be fine.
Which is fine. It's the structure that was given in order to extract.
Right, but it means that none of these things were actually told to Moshe at Sinai. Right? That's what it means. It means that it was never heard of until the rabbis made them up.
Okay.
Or made up before. What? Fine. You're right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. But whereas he says, as he's going to say, he called Rabbim Tmuyim V'yevshal Aniyat Dati B'Koleshet Kolshat Sichli L'Homam. He says, I don't understand how he could say this. And he says, I'm not the kind of person that that usually argues with those that came before him. But he says, Lumudim Haniel Madim Yud Gimel Midot Hem B'Sinai. Does anything that's learned from the Yud Gimel Midot is from Sinai. K'mo Shekatov V'Yim Ken Lo Shaych B'Hem Shechachal V'Ari Al Talmud Malei V'Machloket V'Hem. He says, But the Torah, the Talmud is filled with machloket. This is the strongest argument that he's going to make, by the way. The thing is that with Gzera Shava, which is one of the Midot and Yudoshot, we're in the Yud Gimel Midot, based on many places in Shas, in order for Gzera Shava to be valid, Gzera Shava means that there's a word here, and then there's a sufficiently similar word somewhere else. And it could be that these two halachot have nothing to do with each other. They're completely different contexts. But we learn from one to the other, and from the other to the first. Okay? So, example. Kicha kicha misteyafo. Right? How do we know that, I don't know if this actually, Avram took.
That means.
So, there from Ephron. What happened? Can you see me?
What happened? I see you, but I don't.
Okay. I don't know what happened. I lost my sharing screen because my internet connection.
The reception is a bit bad.
Hold on, maybe if I put my phone somewhere better.
Yeah.
Works at home. Okay, maybe that'll be better now. No, I lost them all.
I'm still here. I don't know where David went.
Oh, okay. I'm not using your Wi-Fi, Abby. Yeah, no. Okay. Dad, can you see my screen still? Severe delay. Okay. Ready? All right, we'll continue. So
I don't see anything you're posting, no.
Okay, well, I'm screen sharing, so hopefully it'll show up soon. So we have Kikaki Kamistera from, so you learn one from the other.
I don't see anything. Are you posting something on your screen?
I'm screen sharing, okay. But maybe it'll show up, maybe it won't, but I'm going to keep talking. You know what I'll do? Maybe I'll send the file now anyways.
Got it.
Oh, you got it. Okay. Okay. So,
can I ask, what's the philosophical point you're trying to make on that?
Yeah, so just one more, to finish the point, the Gzera Shava has to have a tradition from Sinai, the Gemara says.
In order for you to make one.
Yes. If it doesn't have a tradition from Sinai, then it doesn't count.
What it is.
Yes. That's
so
the problem. That's the strange thing. That's
what
he says. That's what he says is strange. You know, it's obvious if it's from Sinai, then there was some forgetfulness. I will give you one funny Gzera Shava. I just learned this with my son. It's Gemara in Makot. I think it's Yud or Yud Aleph. And you'll tell me why it's funny. There's a Machoket about... I can't remember actually the content right now, but it has to do with, you know what? I can't remember the content, but there was a machloket between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So machloket between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, starting to come back to me, but you know what? I'm not going to waste time. There's a machloket between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and Rav Yochanan says he learns his version from a Gzera Shava. And the Reish Lakish says, I don't agree with you because Gzera Shava Zu Lo Gamir. I don't have a tradition about that. Now, what's strange about this? What? Yeah. The problem is Reish Lakish was a bandit. He wasn't frum until Rav Yochanan brought him to Judaism. And then he taught him everything. So how does he turn to his Rebbe and say, I don't have that tradition? So I actually have to do more research because I was just blown away. I couldn't see anything on the daf. Nobody noticed. Yeah, but he was saying, I don't have a tradition about it. Rashi explicitly says, I don't have a tradition about it. How can Reish Lakish say that to Rav Yochanan? I'm confused. I have to do more research about that. But either way, be that as it may, the Chavos Yair is saying, Gzera Shava has machlokas about it. He says, how could that be?
Just a side question, and I think I know the answer to it. You haven't brought Lev HaShemayim into this at all. But is that because that's suck rather no, than...
It definitely, it definitely matters. I'm going to come back to it. Probably not tonight. Okay. It definitely matters. There's a whole slew of the Gemaras that when you talk about Torah Shabbat, you have to talk about.
Right.
And that's one of them.
Okay.
So, Le'aniyot Dati, he says, Yiv Shara B'Shum Tzad Le'Himalit Milomar She'yesh Hen B'Pesh Ha'Ktuv Hen B'Midot Hen B'Dashot Hen B'Dorayim She'Karu Chazal Halach L'Moshe M'Sina Hen B'Shara Pirtei Dinim B'Kol Sidrei Hezman Nakat. There's forgetfulness, everything. Av Ki Kulam Halach L'Moshe M'Sina Av Ki Amar Ha'Yodeh Nistarot Yitbarach She'Sof Sh'Yuldu Sveikot Ayidei Shecha Ve'Hitrashlut Ve'Avon Ki Paleh Mimcha Lo Tasur Ve'Acharei Rabim Lev. And you know who knew that there was going to be forgetfulness? God knew there was going to be forgetfulness. And that's why he gave us rules and tools to deal with that forgetfulness. He told us, you have to listen to the rabbinic authorities, you have to listen to the Sanhedrin. He said, you have to follow the majority view. Why would he make a rule that you have to follow the majority view if he didn't know there was going to be a machloket? And machloket comes from forgetfulness. As a side point, he notes at the end, he says, it could be that machloket and forgetfulness comes from the hitting of the rock. It's a little mystical point at the end over there. That's the source for it. I do also want to mention the Or HaChaim Kadosh in Chukotai, okay, from a few parshiot again, a few parshiot ago. I don't know if you noticed, but in Parshat Chukotai, in the first pasuk of in Chukotai, let mitzvotai tishmeru, he gave a shira, a parsha shira about this. The Or HaChaim has no less than 42 explanations for the words in Chukotai teilecho. 42, and I read through them, distinct. They are not the same. No two are exactly the same. There are some that are similar to each other, but they're all different. 42 explanations. For basically one word over there, Telechu, wants to explain why the word Telechu shows up over there.
Have you ever heard Rabbi Bernstein?
On 42? No.
I've got a recording.
Okay. So I after most of them. And what's funny is that even before that, but I don't even want to quote the 42. I want to quote what he says right before that. Because he... First he quotes Rashi. Rashi says, "Shetiu amelim betorah," because it says, "Imbuku gotai teleichu et mitzvotai tishmeru." So "imbuku gotai teleichu" can't mean that you're supposed to do Torah, because that's what "et mitzvotai tishmeru" means. So what is "imbuku gotai teleichu"? So Rashi says it means "Shetiu amelim betorah." So the Baruch Chaim says, "But why would Hashem want to use the word "imbuku gotai" for this, for learning Torah?" So he argues that there is a chok in Torah. And the chok in Torah, chok meaning there's something that we don't totally understand. And Hashem wants us to learn Torah even when we've already learned it. He wants us to continue to learn it over and over. And he says, it doesn't make sense. Every kid says, why do I have to learn it? I've already learned it. And he says, but Hashem was smart. He did something to make sure that we would have no choice but to learn it again. He made us forget. And that way, we learn it 101 times, because he wanted us to learn it over and over, and we wouldn't do it if we already remembered. So he makes us forget, so that we have to learn again. And just as my added homiletics, because he doesn't say this, I think it works very well with chok over there, because chok lachok is to carve, right? When you learn something, if you learned it and remembered it, you'd never have to learn it again. It wouldn't make an impression on you, because you would just know it on the surface level, and just whenever you need the information, you would go get it. But when you have to learn something over and over, it creates indentations in your personality. Because you don't just learn it once, you learn it again, and it changes you. And it changes you again and again and again. And that's what he did by making us having to learn Torah over and over. It makes a difference inside of us instead of just being on the surface level. Okay. So that has to do with forgetfulness. Now, where did I want to go with this? So we're going to go a lot of places with this. But I wanted to set the baseline over here for a fundamental machloket about how much of Torah Shebaal Peh is directly from Sinai, which relates to what I brought up in terms of Lo Bashamayim. It will relate, not tonight, but I don't think tonight, but on another night, hopefully, to when Moshe went to see Rabbi Akiva, when he entered the time machine and he went to Rabbi Akiva's class. And it'll relate to many other things. And we'll hopefully get back and see whether this machloket Chavot Yair and the Rambam can fit in. But before we get there, I want to go a little bit deeper. You might even be there already. Go a bit deeper into defining what Torah Sheba'al Peh's relationship with Torah Sheba'al Peh is. So first, we have the Shlach. The Shnei Luchot Arbit, which is my ancestor on my mother's side, Horowitz. So he writes, his Sfarim are very, very strange. They're not like anything you've ever seen. Like the makeup of them are, I don't know, they're hard to describe. It doesn't have a classic Perush on the Torah. It doesn't have a classic anything. In fact, I just got a 4-volume version of his work, and the second volume is called Masechtot. Okay, so I assumed this is his Perush on Shas, right? If you open it up, it says Masechet Shabbat, Masechet Pesachim, Masechet Shavuot, Masechet Chulin. Okay, so these are the Masechtos. I thought this for like 2 years already. Then I open it up. And that's not what it is. It's whatever he has to say about Shabbos, he put in Masechet Shabbos. It's not on the Gemara. It's his Masechet Shabbos. It's his Masechet Shabbos. Masechet Shavuot, which in Shas has to do with vows. So that's what I assumed it was. It's about Shavuos. I was learning it all Shavuos night. I was learning through it. And then there's Chulin, which is not about Shechting. Maybe the recording will continue. We lost you for a second. Okay, go to continue to record. Okay. Sorry. Do you see my screen? You're on mute. Okay, now you should see my screen.
Nope, don't say anything.
Okay, in a minute
I see a tiny screen on the bottom.
Okay, in a minute you're going to see my screen.
Okay.
Okay, so what does the Shlach say? He says, Akavana Bazeh Inyan Mishnah. What's the idea of Mishnah? This is in what's called Klal Rebbe. I'll tell you what the Shlach does. He has an essay on Torah Sheba'al Peh, and it's on the word, he takes the words, Ela, Vela, what's the pasuk in about Torah Sheba'al Peh? Now it's slipping my mind, even though it's critical. Vela Dvarim Asher Diber Hashem. Api Advarim Aila Karati Etchem Brit Hayom. Something like that. Basically, he takes those and he makes it into an acrostic, and then he talks about each one of them. So he has Klal Rebbe. He wants to talk about Rebbe Donasi and the Mishnah. So what does he say? Rebbe Shu Rabbeinu Hakadosh Hu Katav Mishnayot Sidram Al Ken Yitba'er B'Klal Hazeh. You ever wonder what Mishnah means? So he says it comes from the Lashon of Mishneh Lamelech, the second to the king. It's the second to the king. Vishinantam, Mitagamin and Vitatninun.
That's two completely different ways to understand the Torah Sheba'al Peh.
In what sense?
One's a translation of Torah Sheba'al Peh, and the other is Mishneh Lamelech, meaning it's a secondary set of halachot.
What do you mean by the first thing that you said?
The argument would be that Torah Sheba'al Peh is there to expand and explain what Torah Sheba'al Peh meant when it said something, because it was an abbreviated form in essence.
Right.
So the Torah says, creates Adar, what does that mean? It says Sukkah. Right. It's a Sukkah. We expand. It's this high, this
big. Isn't that what we
were
taught?
The law says don't speak on your phone when you drive. Okay, what's that mean? What's a phone? What's driving? It has to expand.
Isn't that what we were taught? Isn't that what we all thought?
That's what we generally understand Torah Sheba'al Peh.
Good. And that's what he says.
The other one, Mishneh Lamelech, is completely different.
Why?
Because it's saying it's a secondary set of laws. But they're not connected. It's saying it's second.
No. Mishneh Lamelech is the one that serves the king. He serves the king. He's secondary in the sense that, you know, the primary is the king.
You're saying it's a servant, but
yeah, that's what Mishneh Lamelech
is. Secondary, a vice president is a separate entity to the president.
Not really. The president has the power. The vice president carries it out. And certainly the viceroy of the king, his job is to carry out the desires of the king and explain to people.
Yosef was Mishneh Lamelech.
What, Dad?
Yosef was Mishne Lamelech.
But he made his own rules.
But presumably he got the power to do that from the king.
Okay. Right, but that you could argue
was separate.
It has the power in that it's been given a structure and a framework to create its own laws.
But it could never contradict the Torah.
Because it's separate.
Right, exactly. It has an auxiliary status.
It can create new rules.
As long as they're in the spirit of the Torah. And he continues the metaphor by saying that's what Tanayim are, that's what Amoraim are. Amoraim are those that say, and Ma'amar HaMelech, the Gilui Ritzono. Ukomo Shepirush HaRamban, Vayomer Shepirush HaChafetz V'Ratzon. That's what Amira is, to say what you want. Fine. This is, I think, the classic understanding of what Torah Shabbat Peh is. Yes? Now we're going to, I'm not going to say I'm going to blow your minds, but I'll at least impress you. We'll read what Rav Hirsch has to say, and I'm pretty sure you've never had these thoughts before, and I think it will change the way that we see Torah Shabbat Peh, because he definitely views it differently. He says the first, and keep in mind, this is Rav Hirsch writing in his, basically, this is from the preface to the English version of Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch wrote in German, and he wrote a Perush. So the person who wrote the translation, so at the beginning he put an understanding of Rav Hirsch's worldview of Torah Shabbat Peh and Torah Shbichtav based on Rav Hirsch's writings in other places. So this isn't Rav Hirsch himself, but it's his words. The first point to remember is that it was not out of the Pentateuch that the law was to be acquired. The five books of the Torah were to be delivered into the hands of those who were already well informed as to the law as a means of preserving and reviving this knowledge ever afresh in their memories. We'll get to the end of the paragraph, but what he said was already amazing. The books were also to enable the teachers of the law to fulfill their task, to be the source to which students go for reference, and to enable scholars to recall to their minds the knowledge they had received orally. First, the first thing he says is something that we should have known and that we know, but we never really thought of it this way. It's hard to imagine the Chumash as being a book of law that was meant to be used as a pure book of law when it was given to people that didn't need it. The Chumash was given to people that were at Sinai and had Moshe Rabbeinu. When they wanted to know what halakha was, they didn't look in the Torah. They just asked Moshe. They didn't need it. Right? That's not what, for them, learning Torah wasn't looking the Chumash to find out what the halakha is. They don't need that. They were taught at Sinai. So for the people that received the book, for them, it wasn't the source of, you know, what they should do for them. The second thing he says is the purpose of it is merely to revive the knowledge of Sinai. What does he mean by that? So to understand that, we have to go to the second paragraph. Thus, in the conception of Hirsch, Torah Shebichtav is to Torah Shebaal Peh as short notes are to a full and extensive lecture on a scientific subject. This is amazing. For the student who has heard the whole lecture, short notes are quite sufficient to bring back afresh to his mind at any time the whole subject of the lecture. For him, a word, an added mark of interrogation, exclamation, a dot, the underlying of a word, is often quite sufficient to recall to his mind the whole series of thoughts or a remark. But for those who had not heard the lecture from the master, the notes would not be of much use. If they were to try to reconstruct the scientific contents of the lecture literally from such notes, they would of necessity make many errors. Anybody taking notes over the course of 40 hours of classes, unless they were transcribing what the teacher wrote, they have to turn 10 minutes into two sentences, right? Now, they can do that because they were in the lecture. So they can write something and then know later what it was talking about. But if they give those notes to somebody else who wasn't there, they're going to need a lot of help to understand. The Torah is just notes. Words which serve those scholars who had heard the lectures, instructive guiding stars to the wisdom that had been taught and learnt, stare at the uninitiated as unmeaning sphinxes. The wisdom, the truths, this is the key, which the initiated reproduce from them, but do not produce out of them, are sneered at by the uninitiated as being merely a clever or witty play of words and empty dreams without any real foundation. So it is with the Torah. To the initiated who is guided by the oral law, every letter, stroke, sign, or ornamentation of a letter in the Torah may be the basis of mounds of mounds of law. Stealing tilin shal halacha. It's a reference to what I was talking about.
There is an ultimate correct interpretation of that. If you can remember the lecture correctly.
Correct. And more than that, what did Rav Hirsch just do? As opposed to the Shlach, who says that the Mishnah, it's called the Mishnah because it's the Mishnah on Melech. He flipped it around. He said, the true Torah is the Torah Shabbat Peh.
The Torah Shabbat Peh is not notes because
what those notes were referring from. He couldn't look at the Torah and understand everything. So we need a human note because God's notes weren't good enough for us.
The Torah Shabbat Peh is not notes because it's Baal Peh. The essence of being Baal Peh is that it can't be written down.
No, our Mishnah is our notes of the Torah Shabbat Peh because God's notes weren't.
No, you're not going to have me. We don't mean to say that Shas is the lecture. We don't mean to say that. I mean, it's closer to the lecture than Chumash is.
What the Shlach is talking about the Mishnah is he's talking about the Torah of the Mishnah, or is he talking about the actual written
Mishnah by Rabbi Yehuda Anasi.
So this is the same thing. So God knows this is our human.
Except that the Shlach is saying that the primal thing is the Torah Shebichtav. And the Torah Shebichtav is there to help you. It's there to help you.
What
Hashem really meant, what Hashem really meant when he said that.
What I've done is saying is the Shla saying, when it says, that's the cut picture of Shabbat Yimim, that's the core. Right? Everything else is just understanding what God meant when he said that. Right? Whereas Rav Dan is saying, Rav Hirsch is saying the opposite in a way. He's saying the law was to sit in a booth that's exactly like this, and God summarized it by saying, sit in a sukkah for 7 days.
I'll tell you what could in theory be the difference.
He talks about ready. He talks about people running down. He doesn't talk about the Torah, which was what they were talking about.
But think about it from this perspective.
He's talking about that which was written down.
If we were doing an Iyun Shir, right? And I would say, okay, between the Chabot Ya'ir and the Rambam, what are they arguing about? In theory, the Rambam would fit a lot better into the Shlach, right? Because he's saying that everything that is not, everything that there's a machloket about wasn't transmitted to Moshe at Sinai. It had to be explained by the rabbis, extrapolated from the Torah, because it wasn't given to Moshe at Sinai. It had to be extrapolated.
That's what
the Shlach is talking about. It's the Mishnah LeMelech. The Torah is the key, and you have to try to, you have to try to squeeze everything you can out of it, because we weren't given everything. Whereas Rav Hirsch, and I think the Chavad Yair, are saying, no, everything was given at Sinai. It just couldn't all be, contained, so it had to be written in shorthand, and some things were forgotten.
Would it be correct to characterize Rav Hirsch as saying that what's Torah Shebichtav is an outline, and the outline topic sentences Roman numeral 1,
yes,
laws of Shabbat, no work on Shabbat,
yes. And I would say even further. If you were to compare it to a book in modern Jewish literature, the Chumash, this is very surprising to me because I never would have said this before. Is there a book in modern Jewish literature which is kind of like Chumash according to Rav Hirsch? I think it's the Shulchan Aruch. Because Shulchan Aruch, right, covers a bunch of cases, but it's never the cases that actually happen, right? In order to cover the actual cases that happen, you got to have the commentaries. But it's this, like, here are the baselines, here's the main things that you need to know.
It wasn't Moshe who wrote it. Which means even if like every extra bulk, there wasn't intended, it wasn't necessarily given all over to the people at Mount Sinai. The other notes, they didn't necessarily.
I think in Rav Hirsch's version, it is. Those are, that was the original, the way the original was set.
It wasn't intent, but
But listen to what he said at the beginning. At the beginning, he said the books of the Torah were to be delivered into the hands of those who were already well informed as to the law. Like I said before, the people at Sinai didn't look into the Chumash to see if there was extra vav. They didn't have to, because they heard the lecture. That's not the reason. Shlomo would say that's the reason. Shlomo would say, "Oh, because they didn't know that it was connected to that. We forgot to right away." I have other examples of this.
You're specifically talking about the elements of Chumash, non-narrative.
Yes, it could be the narrative parts also. You know, there's always a dispute. Confusion about whether a midrash is traditional or whether it's not. We don't know. So then he goes on to talk about the Torah Nidrash, the Midot Torah Nidrash, the Midot Shatara Nidreshet Bahen, and he says that when it's explained by means of the Midot, it will yield the oral law in all details. For the written text is written down from the outset with this end in view. Of course, he agrees with everybody that the way to reveal the original primal Torah, that's I think the best word for it, is the primal Torah, the original Torah, is through the Midot, and that was what was transmitted through the generations so that we could actually reveal them. And that, it also, by the way, according to the verse, by the way, it's not surprising that there should be some halachot that you don't find in the Chumash. That there should be halachot that are not mentioned, because everything was not in the Chumash.
How do you reconcile that with a derisa and a derabana?
I said before, we're not talking about anything that's derabana. None of the things that we're talking about are purely man-made. Everything that we're talking about are things that the rabbis argue that either they were transmitted by Moshe, this was the intent of the Torah. Yeah. All right. It's late, so we're going to stop here. We'll pick it up next time. And the question that I want to ask is, if all this being the case, if Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebaktav are so close together, what difference is there between them? Is there a difference between whether Halacha is explicit in the Chumash and whether it's implicit or hidden or revealed only through tradition or through hermeneutics? Right? Yeah, this gets to the core of a lot of things.
It's a very different way of